Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, another Monday evening and the same old Edwin. Hi Edwin, how are you going?
Same old Martin. Let me ask you a question. Did you get a Black Friday sale special? Did you buy anything special? Any surprises there?
No. See, my theory is that only half of the deals are real deals. The other are actually spurious anyway. And if you were going to buy something anyway and you can get it cheaper, then that's a real deal, right? But if you weren't going to buy something and you decide to buy something, that's 100% more expensive than it should be. So I'm pretty skeptical personally. What about you?
Well, look, I was shopping around for some tools. And, first of all, I went to Sydney Tools. And the thing is, they had only limited amount of tools that were on special, nothing that I really needed. And then there was another site called Kogan or something. Like I'm learning about all these things, right?
Oh, yeah, Kogan, yes, I know all about Kogan, yeah.
And then with a little bit more Googling and so forth, then I got it on Amazon. Yep. I got the Kogan product cheaper on Amazon, and I'm thinking Kogan are still making a profit on the Amazon sale, but yet I'm getting it cheaper than I could get it direct. And then a mate of mine says, be careful because they raise the prices before, and then they pretend there's a sale. So make sure it's a real genuine sale.
Exactly. Well, I made a show the other day asking whether in fact Black Friday was a con, and statistically speaking, only half of the products are actually discounted relative to what the prices were before or after. And about 25% of them, you can almost always do better after Black Friday. In other words, between now and Christmas, right? So you know, there are some good deals there, but there are quite a few who aren't. So you've got to be really careful, I think, because some people get carried away and there are some rules about people claiming what price was, what price is, but you got to really do the research to make sure that it really is a bug.
Definitely. Well, I think, I don't know whether you're doing on your surveys, whether you've added, if people are going to be doing some garage sales as they come into need of some money for the end of the year. But, that's where I've got a lot of great bargains of people's gifts or yep. tools that they've bought and the like, and yeah, whether it be tools or interesting stuff, memorabilia that I like to buy from time to time, it is there. But look, talking about surprises and what you can find, I mean, no surprises with the latest survey, Martin. What's going on?
What do you mean, the ethics index?
Well, yeah, the ethics index. I mean, they've got real estate agents, the third from the bottom. At least we're one bar ahead of the state and federal politicians, and the lowest the organisation that scored the lowest was TikTok. So they're comparing us to TikTok. But yeah, Dusty tells me that the CCP actually one notch above real estate agents. They came fourth last.
Well, it is interesting there, and there's some shenanigans going off in China at the moment, aren't there? With a certain amount of protests about the lockdowns and people holding up blank pieces of paper and even suggesting that Xi might be persuaded to exit stage left, which I don't think will happen. But it's probably the most vociferous protest that I think I've ever recalled.
Well, I'm surprised they're not out there with tanks and machine guns. I mean, they're walking around. You see some interesting stuff out there. But look, I guess with all this kerfuffle that's going around, you and I've been talking about the issues that then obviously impact the construction industry here, impact the building industry, and then has a roll-on effect with what our followers and whatever industry they're involved with and our viewers are involved with. It's going to have a major impact on materials, whether it be resources and materials that we need in order to manufacture something if we manufacture here, unless we're importing that 100% of the finished goods over, which is predominantly in the construction industry as well. But with all that, you and I have been talking about it, we've been warning and talking about these issues, but I'm going to sort of look at another side. I don't think people are aware of what the catalyst is to the latest demonstrations, and that you and I touched on the issues around the lockdowns that they were facing from a few weeks ago, where entire industrial centres which house the workers, up to 5, 6, 10,000 workers housed in the complex there, that were shut down, and they were running without food for a whole week. In some cases, were clocking up towards 2 weeks without food and other services, and they were being shut down. But you know what? The people there are generally, they were sort of putting up with it as they have been putting up with it since early 2020 with all these things. But do you know what the catalyst is that made them go to the streets?
It's this.
That's right. Because they are fans of the World Cup. And what our WeChat chatter has been telling us from mainland China is the fact that people started waking up and saying, hold on a minute, how is the rest of the world enjoying liberty and freedom and so forth in watching the World Cup? Because they were allowed to be televising the World Cup. The big fans, the Chinese community are big fans of soccer. And so this is what's that catalyst that really lit that fuse and to push people out on the street. So they're saying, hold on, we're putting up with all these things that the CCP are telling us to do. We're putting up with all these lockdowns, that newly imposed lockdowns that the government are imposing on us, and our economy is in the proverbial poop hole. And the rest of the world is opening up and enjoying all this. So that, look, it's, call it hearsay, call it whatever you call it, a conspiracy, but that was the catalyst, strangely enough.
Yeah, interesting. Well, you could certainly say that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, eh?
Well, yeah, and after putting up with so much, and as you and I know, and as we've been talking about, the youth unemployment rate going up from 15% at the beginning of the year to now something like 26%, the people that just finished the tertiary education through the universities, and over 10 million or so literally walking out from university, no jobs, they can't travel overseas in order to further their education even if they had money. So all these things it just got the better of them, and the way it goes. But the interesting thing is, and I think you brought out an earlier podcast today talking about the further implications with these lockdowns are going to be having on the supply chain issues,
yep,
and also the labor and the workforce and everything else that's going to have great effect on our economy and our landscape with regards to property.
Yeah, it's certainly very significant. And you know, the fact is the containers, there's lots of spare containers around the place now suddenly because the supply chain disruption has gone a different way. And it's interesting the exchange rates are down because suddenly people are thinking, maybe China is looking a bit wobbly. And in fact, the Hang Seng was down 2% today. So, you know, bearing in mind the relationship between Australia and China in terms of trade, it's very significant, I think, for what's going on. Watch this space, I guess. But I will just go back to that survey because there was another little nippet of insight which posed your question. Who's the least trusted, least ethical member association in the whole survey, Edwin? Who do you think that might be?
The least trusted association?
Yes.
They tell me it's my good friends from the area in New South Wales.
Well, that's what the survey said. The Real Estate Institute was also named by respondents as the most unethical member association, with the body given a net score of 4.
See, and this is, look, the industry is just absolutely cankered with all the shenanigans that have been going out that I've been voicing since I basically parted ways with the REI in New South Wales. And as I called out with the CEO at the time, and I was very much involved with the CEO and president at the time when I left, and I was saying, listen, guys, we need to fix this. But the problem is that the board of the REI New South Wales is made up of the head honchos of the major franchise groups, and you know they're not going to change. They're not going to change their ways. And obviously they want to have full control. And as George and I being also being very vocal about them wanting to take the education side of things, because that's a huge money, and it's something like $11 billion a year. Yep. The education side and the ongoing CPD, continuous professional development learning that we have to do in order to maintain our licenses. So it's a huge pot of gold, and the REIs want to control it, and they wanted to take full charge of it and take it away from Fairtrade New South Wales. And that's what it is. But as you and I know, Martin, fish rots from the head, and most of the public believe that the REI New South Wales is the head of the real estate industry, and unfortunately that's where the rot comes from, and the owners of the franchise groups, bar one or two.
Absolutely. Well, it goes to form, doesn't it? But let's just switch back to the local chatter, because well, they've been quite busy too.
Look, they have been. Obviously, they've been busy. They've been busy worrying about what's happening with the family and friends over in China. But one of the most, and apart from everything else that we've already shared as to what they're doing and how they're preparing in line with what the government has adopted and what they're wanting to implement moving forward, particularly in 2023. What we still have, nonetheless, presently, is we have a shortage of workers, and as you know, that a lot of the trades workers were people from China, and there were a lot of people from South America and other parts of the world. Obviously, they got sent packing with the lockdowns and got sent back home if they didn't have permanent residency. So we're and with all these issues happening over in Asia and Europe and so forth, we've got a huge shortage in the construction industry across the board of workers. So now what we're finding and what's been happening in these forums, in the WeChat forums with the tradies, they're actually reaching out to the little sisters. Now, we've been sharing about the little brothers. They're the labourers in the construction in heavy industry, and you've got the little sisters are the ladies that obviously have the ghost migrants that have overstayed their visas and so forth, and they're working in predominantly in hospitality now. So now they are coercing all these little sisters to go from those jobs which pay them roughly around $275 to maybe $300 a week a day in cash, coercing them to go over to the building industry. And I'm not talking about just painters, because you see a lot of little sisters in painting teams, but across all aspects of trades, Martin. So there's this tussle now between the tradespeople coercing the little sisters to work with them, and coercing them by offering them $350 to up to $400 a day, and depending on whether or not they pick up the trade. I mean, we're talking heavy manual labor. We're talking about lifting up, assisting in lifting up 6 meter length sheets of gyprock. They're not light. This is, and also with carpentry, plumbing, and any other work, and any other field. So, and this is a reflection of the shortage of manpower that we have. On top of that, we've got a lot of local tradespeople outside of the WeChat chatters. I was talking to some electricians that are literally picking up camper vans or caravans, packing the tools up, and they're heading inland because insurance companies are paying a mozza to assist the people around Forbes and those towns. And and they're thinking, well, why would I want to hang around Sydney at this time when I could go make squillions over in that? So we're losing those trades. So more of a reason why there's this I guess, tussle of trying to, trying to attract workers into the workforce. And then we're also getting closer to the end of the year, which a lot of tradespeople, local tradespeople, pretty much tools down and take it easy for the rest of the year. So, yeah, it's a mess out there, Mark.
Yeah, and you make a very interesting point about this idea of people going to the more distressed areas. I've certainly had a couple of conversations with tradespeople who have actually up stumps and moved over the ranges, and they're making huge amounts of money, huge amounts. So creating a huge void in terms of capability up the coast.
Well, I can tell you. Only speaking to a colleague on Saturday, and he was heading to his mother's place, nearby Forbes there, to help him out, just getting ready, picking up as much as they could that they could salvage from the mess that they're involved. And the insurance company, Martin, has paid them 2 years of rent in advance upfront. So anybody that was covered by insurance, this is NRMA, they're giving them a payout of something like $48,000 of upfront, because they are telling the people that they're making claims on their insurance that have got this cover. They're telling them that they won't be able to have their homes rectified or fixed or go back for them to move to live back in. For they're proposing the earliest 18 months, the worst case scenario, 2 years.
Yep.
That is how much work there's out there. So what's happening right now, where you're seeing a lot of tradespeople going over there, is because there is an essential part of that the insurance companies have to do, and that is make safe.
Yep.
So they have to send tradespeople in there, regardless of what they pay, in order to make the building safe to a certain standard, to maintain a certain standard. So there's a lot of big demolition crews and so forth that just taking the trailers, trucks, camper vans, everything else they can, because they can own a motto. And look, at the end of the day, you ask yourself the question, why not?
Well, it makes that they're able to increase their income significantly, and it's interesting that of course the wages have gone up quite a lot for some of those trades as well, looking at the baseline as well. So yeah. I think I'm in the wrong business, but maybe I'm too old for that. Well, let's move on to talk about some of the interesting changes in the articles. One of the most significant, you and I have been saying, right, they're going to pull more levers. They're going to actually try and get more people to borrow more to be able to support the property market. And the latest, of course, is NAB came out and said, well, we'll just up the haircut we do for rentals from 80 to 90. In other words, we can lend you some more money now.
Yeah, and if you recall, not too long ago, they were even thinking about reducing the rental income to about 70%, because even that, you can fudge the books on that. So, look, the thing is that the banks are obviously looking at the security that they have because of the shortage of properties. So in terms of the shortage of properties, the rents have increased, so the banks feel a little bit more comfortable because of the very, very low access that people have to lettable properties. So let's think laterally, Martin. Now, you said there's a glut of containers. Think about it.
Yep.
Think about it.
Yep.
Maybe somebody should get a word out to Albo. Yeah, container homes.
Absolutely. Instant homes, just cut a few squares out, bung a few windows in, and Bob's your uncle. You've got a mini home.
Yes. That's a better way to solve the rental crisis. Look, I have seen 40-foot containers put together and converted into a studio / granny flat. You see a lot of that in some of the there's a particular camping site or caravan site over at Windsor, and you'll see about two or three of these, and they're put together quite well, and you see some really great designs. So look, there's a thought for Arlo. I don't know if he's listening or watching. But I know Dawn Perrottet watches us, so maybe you could flick the link over to Albo. And you know, I reckon it's a better start to the million homes than what they're proposing, because they still haven't come up with a criteria what these million homes really are going to be. Are they going to be shoeboxes on the 17th floor of a high rise development that's falling to bits? I don't know, but I'll put my money. I'd live in a container before I go and live in Apple Tower any day of the week.
No, I agree. As long as you don't stack the containers on top of each other and make a high rise container edifice, I think that I've watched some of these containers on the ships. It's quite amazing. You see how high they get stacked, and you know how close to the edge of the. I'm thinking, if I was going to ship something in a container, I'd want my container right in the middle of the ship, down low, not right on the edge of the very tall pile. Now, the other interesting thing, and I think you called this the Perrottet effect a bit more, but WA firm goes bust. Another one.
Yeah, it goes bust, and so therefore you have you're going to have less construction, less buildings, and the answer to all this obviously is because of supply chain issues. You got costs to go up. We spoke about the cost to even build these. Even if you're going to be building mid tier apartments, they've skyrocketed from $360,000 per lot or per unit. In the development side to, and this is only mid-tier developments, to right up to now, they're talking $540,000, $560,000. That's how much we've had of an increase in cost of even building these shoeboxes that we so that we build all over Sydney. To this point, you've even got the RBA saying that we're going to see more insolvencies happening, so there's going to be more pain in the space of the construction and building industry. And this is something that you and I even raised last week with how many notices that I've been getting for companies of all sorts going into liquidation, insolvency, and they're being liquidators appointed. So that's increasing, and it's interesting how what you and I have been talking about even on previous weeks, it's sort of almost evolving. It's almost like we've got some sort of a prophetic mantra around us, Martin, that we're able to tell.
We can see the future, Edwin. We can see the future, right? We'll cross our palms with silver, and we'll tell you how it's going to be. but it is interesting. It is interesting that the RBA in that stability report said close to 30% of all company insolvencies are going to be in the construction sector. That's a big, big number. And, you know, just to be clear, it's quite a lot of big companies, but also a lot of small ones too. And the higher interest rates are putting intense pressure on, as the RBA said. So my conclusion to all of this is that we've just started to see the early signs of this. This is not, you know, the end of the falls, as it were, in terms of the number that are going to fall over. I think we're going to see a lot more. And of course, that means it's really, really important if people are actually going to commit to a construction project or even a big renovation project to make quite sure that they've done their due diligence on the construction company that they're actually picking, because there are many that are actually struggling significantly. And of course, if you are in this unfortunate situation where you've got a half-finished project and the construction company falls over, it's a real mess to try and sort out.
Look, it is. And the other thing is it's a weird position to be in, because one of my colleagues said to me, well, if the bigger construction companies are falling over, that means that there's going to be more tradespeople available to work on the smaller projects. You know, it may be the case in one sense, but in another sense, it's not, because what happens is a lot of these contractors are generally middle-aged, and they'll take an early retirement because they've just had enough. They just throw their hands up in the air. Yeah. So what we're seeing people, because of the mandates and because of the situation that's happening here, people in the even as in the mid to late 40s are just saying, you know what, I've had enough. I'll go and do something else. I've got enough to. They'll do something. They'll go and set up a. They'll go and set up a store in a market somewhere just to make ends meet, in order not to have the headache. Because going through insolvency, going through liquidation process, and losing a lot of money is devastating to a lot of people. A lot of people can't handle that sort of those sort of pressures, let alone family. So you've got all these things that are impacting that are around the periphery of one core issue, but it's affecting, it's impacting so many different lifestyles around that people don't understand. And so that's, yeah, so when you start to, hence the reason why we're seeing a huge shortage in good tradespeople out there, because you know what, a lot of the people that I know, a lot of my old mates and everything, they've just taken a little bit of time, they've just had enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's, it's an interesting statistic in the ABS numbers about the working population and the number of people who are actually outside of the working population. And one of the reasons why the employment rate is where it is because there are quite a few people who've, like the examples you gave, have chosen to step out of the employable workforce. They're not looking for work, therefore they're not counting the numbers. And in fact, that trend is not just an Australian trend. In a number of other Western countries, it's the same trend as well. So we've got more people than before who are outside the workforce. That's one of the reasons why the numbers are where they are. Talk about numbers. Well, what's going on with Sydney?
Well, look, we are seeing now the impact of the end of year seasonal changes. This is, we've really gone down. We're probably 500 listings short of from where we were the beginning of last week. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this trend continues over the next few weeks. This is the last week of spring anyway. Look, we should have seen some of this retraction a couple of weeks ago, but we didn't. But what now, in my opinion, now is the really more of a time to, if you must buy, if you're really in the market to buy, well, you just keep an eye out on your areas that you're looking to see who comes on market over the next 2 or 3 weeks, because they really need to sell. They're really motivated to sell. So yeah, there are some there'll be some opportunities there. What we are interested in, what we are seeing on the back end also, is the fact that there's a lot of properties that are lingering on and are changing hands with the real estate agents. So hence the reason why the numbers are still relatively buoyant as to what we were before. So we are seeing the change nevertheless. But also, again, we go back into what you always talk about, looking at things granular. But when there are some areas or some suburbs in Sydney where nothing's really changed. Others have had an increase in properties in those areas, and in others we've had a significant change where you've gone down from 14 listings right down to 3 listings. So yeah, you've just got to be particular about, because we're talking general terms, we are starting to see and feel the overall changes to the Sydney numbers.
Well, let's just quickly go through them. So the 28th, Monday the 28th, it's 18,187. That's where we started. And then if we go to the 21st, so that's last week, it was 18,609, so a little down. And then if you go to the Thursday the 24th, which is your normal peak day, isn't it?
That's
18,676. So you can pretty much get a sense of where we are then.
Yeah, and if you follow our videos, our podcasts, you see that how the numbers have been changing. Again, I also post these up on Twitter so that people can see. But what's interesting, Martin, is there's still a bit of excitement and enthusiasm in your confidence level in vendors going to auction now. Obviously, regardless of the fact that things are pulling back a bit, the confidence levels are there. But it doesn't mean that the attendance levels are as high. But again, it depends what sort of stories the agents are telling the vendors as to how convince them. And I guess because of, as we talked about, the many indexes and different people calling the bottom of the market, There's been a bit of enthusiasm as to a rebound in certain areas. So, but what I saw personally, I didn't see the numbers that we even saw a week or even 2 weeks ago in certain pockets that I'm personally looking for clients for. In areas in one or two areas from my colleagues that are looking for their clients. Yeah, they said, you know, things are still a little bit buoyant, but most areas that we've been looking at have the numbers aren't as in terms of attendance, even sticky beaks. The sticky beak numbers, which is your neighbours, that they're not there. The enthusiasm is lost a bit, but which is in contrast to the number of auctions being taken to market.
Yeah, and just on the auctions, there's an interesting. I'm fascinated by Victoria, right? So this is the next auction for the 3rd of December, right? 1,089, right, compared with 946. 965 904. So now obviously there was an election this last weekend, so that might be part of it, but that's in interesting contrast, whereas last week New South Wales 903 823 ahead. So you know, but Victoria and Melbourne and New South Wales and Sydney not behaving necessarily in the same track.
And I think that auction number is going to increase then in Victoria. So, I mean, Robbie's going to want to stay there, but everybody else is going to want to leave. So,
and as you made the point, numbers not as large as last week, has the Dom Perrottet effect worn off? Then again, it only takes two to have an auction in some cases, one and the vendor.
Well, that's one in the telegraph pole. If the vendor doesn't get involved with the vendor bid, or as you call it in England, the off the wall bid.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah,
which is legal over there.
It is legal, absolutely. I remember the first time I ever went to an auction, because I used to work in the real estate industry in the UK and would often go to auctions and help. I was astonished that actually you could magic a bid out of nowhere, and in fact it's not just one bid, there's no limit to how many you can magic, right? So the auctioneer, I think one of the first ones I was there, essentially had a whole auction without any real live bidders, and it got passed in, of course, but he still gave the impact that there was a lot of interest, and you know, so it was all theater. And I never have lost that thought, that an auction is 98% theatre.
Look, it is, yeah, exactly, and this is something that a lot of people don't really get. It's a game. Hmm. It's really like in a theatre. It's a game, and you just got to learn how to play. You just got to learn how to play the game, and it just as we've shared over and over again, just because the auctioneer says wants to take it one way, doesn't mean they have to follow. The only thing that you can't do by law is you can't collude with another party. Yep. To outside of that, yeah, you know, it's all fair in love and auctions. So yeah, you could ask the auctioneer questions. You could slow things down. You could speed things up. You could start having a conversation with a lad. You could do all sorts of things as long as you don't collude. But this is the interesting part, and I shared it in one of my posts. This is the interesting part. Collusion is potentially. Is having a conversation with another buyer, to more or less get an indication of what the other buyer is going to pay, and you letting them know what you are willing to pay as well. So there's a grey area there as to the definition of or how you could be really pinned by the regulators, but yet it's all fair on the other side of the coin, where there's no price discovery, where there's underquoting going on and all these things. But yet they could pin me if I have a conversation, if somebody dobs me in or one of my team members in to fair trading to say, oh, he was asking the other buyer how much they're willing to pay. I mean, I've got to be careful how I hold my conversations with with other potential buyers. You know, I still converse with them as much as I can, but I don't necessarily ask them what they're going to be willing to pay for, because you just got to be careful. But you know, it's so the scales are certainly weighed against the buyers, and as you say, it's theatre. It's a show in which the it's an arena. I would call it more of an arena where the opposition, the auctioneer and the selling agent, have got a bigger arsenal than any one of the buyers.
It's bread and circuses. It's entertainment. There you go. Now let's just look at Victoria briefly. So the numbers there on the 28th, 26,246, which is a big number. Compared with the previous week, this is 21st, 26,170.
And then we're going north.
Yeah, and then on the Thursday, the 24th, 26,590. So it does look as though Victoria is still, well, it's going on its own little sort of tack, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think a lot of these sellers must have predicted who the winning party was going to be, and they just went out.
Yeah, could be. makes you wonder.
They tell me, I mean, Dusty, I don't know whether it's true, Dusty and Evan, you know, having their little conversations, I've heard them say that Xi Jinping is eyeing out, a mansion over in Victoria now that the Premier's got his third term.
Well, the Premier is going to get his statue in due course, right?
Yeah, which is outside the Chinese embassy, I
believe. Okay, Brisbane, interesting, 5725 on the 28th. Right, so that's sort of where we, and then on the 24th, 5832. So, yeah, it's still knocking around the same sort of area. Although, I did an Andy Spruik video today, Edwin, which was 150 different examples of property price falls. Many of them were in Queensland. So, Queensland, it looks to me as though definitely continuing to fall. And in fact, CoreLogic said that the prices in and around Brisbane were actually falling faster than Sydney at the moment.
Oh, well, history repeats itself. I've seen a couple of previous cycles being involved in since 1992, and we've just seen the cycles turn around. Queensland, takes a nosedive. The only thing that's been a bit of an outliner this time around is WA, because that's a nosebleed when that cycle comes down. But there's just not enough construction with everything that's going on. I think that that could hold for a little bit longer. Mm. I haven't seen Brisbane and Melbourne fall a lot quicker than Sydney. Have not seen that. Yeah.
Bit consistent, isn't it? Now, talking about consistent, we've been speaking about floodplains and building on floodplains, right? And there was this shocking picture, right? Alert home buyers, Marsden Park, chance of flooding in the future, right? And, you know, the little dotted line here, worst on record, right? At the sort of first floor level. Oh, this is a mess, isn't it?
Oh, look, it is, but it was only a few weeks ago where we're talking about what our viewers should do as soon as they ever go down Richmond Road and enter Marsden Park. You see on the left-hand side, the built-up industrial land there at Marsden Park sits a lot higher than what the built-up residential land sits on. I mean, somebody forgot to tell the residential developers what the hell could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, of course, because there's been a certain amount of shenanigans where certain areas that have been prone to flooding have mystically been redefined as not at risk of flooding.
Yeah, because all you needed to do, and in this report, all you needed to do with this area is by increasing it by a few centimetres. Well, a few centimetres is actually 150 millimetres, which isn't that much. Yep. So, that's how much they raised the level of the land, and they've gone from, they're being able to re-gazette it as not part of the 1 in 100 flood area. But there's so much at play. But look, this is just a conspiracy, Martin, but I think that this
it's wackier than a conspiracy theory ever.
It's wackier, right? But I think I want to believe that we're going to see something major happen in that region. I think this is a pre-warning of what's going to come in terms, and I'm talking about potentially latest mid 2023. I don't know. I just get this eerie feeling the shit's going, something's going to happen around that Marsden Park, Schofield, all those areas.
Yeah, you might get many more water views than you've expected, right?
you might get the water views from Blacktown.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. So again, you know, folks, it's worth just underscoring. There are so many areas out west where the land is low lying, where the risk of flooding is significant, and actually is undisclosed or undeclared on most of the information sheets that's available. You've got to look quite hard to be able to get the true picture. And as everyone said, you know, they've done a little bit of twiddling with lifting the levels just slightly, claiming that it somehow magically solves the problem. Just remember that we've had three 100-year floods in the last couple of years. So chances are we're going to see more flooding, and these are precisely the areas where flooding risk is a problem. And unfortunately, many people are ill-prepared.
Oh, look, they are. And this is the thing. You really got to be in these new subdivisions. I've never really liked them. I've never been a fan of them, or when friends or relatives or the like have asked me to what I thought of these subdivisions, you know, out west. And also there's the southwest region that's yet to be talked about as well in the low-lying areas behind between Liverpool and Campbelltown. So there's a lot of there are a lot of areas with a lot of issues, and not to withstand the fact that outside of the natural topography and the issues around the natural topography, you've also got the fact that there's no bloody infrastructure anyway.
Yes.
So or very little, very little infrastructure, and then sooner than later, unless something comes in and something solid comes in terms of infrastructure to maintain a good level of standard of living there, this place is only turn into ghettos.
Well, the answer, of course, is they should have built canals.
Yeah, they should have.
That would have solved the drainage problems and flooding problems, and solved the infrastructure problem too. There you go.
Yeah, well, you know,
dear Mr. Mr. President,
dear Mr. President. Please now, listen to a little bit closer.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what about this? This is amazing. This is 30K for the selling agent and another 20K for the market. What's a marketing agent?
Okay, the marketing agent is the person that has the listing. They're the companies that are tied up. They've got real estate. Most of them now have got real estate licenses, but they deal directly with a developer. In the past, developers would give the listing to the local agents, but now they use the marketing companies. And the marketing companies are predominantly, or have become over the last 15 years, predominantly owned by Chinese syndicates, and where they market the property to the Chinese community, local Chinese community, and also the Asian community abroad. Hence the reason why even the regulations around the foreign investment, Foreign Investment Review Board and who could buy property changed from around 2013, 2014 developers are only allowed to sell up to about 22% or so of a development of a strata plan to overseas investors. There have been changed that you could sell the whole development site to overseas investors. Hence the reason why we got this huge change even in the landscape and the rezoning of different areas, where then we saw these monstrosities being built all over Sydney, all these shoeboxes being built over Sydney. So the marketing companies are the ones that work directly with the developers now. Marketing companies, as I said, could be Asian real estate agents or the real estate agencies that work predominantly with ethnic groups. Marketing companies can also be finance brokers, such as your mortgage choice, if you recall the issue that they had to tie up with certain development groups. So these are the marketing companies. So they get a slice of the commission. So what I'm trying to show here is the fact that there's a $50,000-$60,000 commission attached to a $900,000 property. And it's a huge difference between a $60,000 commission when your standard commission, let's say best case scenario at the moment currently is about 2%. So 2% where a typical real estate agent, your local real estate agent would be getting $18,000 for the sale of this property. The marketing company now gets $60,000,
yep.
$50,000-$60,000, and they share that, so they're able to do conjunction agreements with local real estate agents to sell them. So that's in a way, it hopefully explains what the marketing company is and what the selling agent is. But on top of that, the scary thing is, but then again, I've mentioned it in my post from as early as 8 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago. You and I may have touched on it as well. Is I said there will be a resurgence of cashback on successful settlement of a contract, or what we call rebates, which is illegal. He got hit on the head in I think the case. I just couldn't find a quick enough the case on hand. It was actually a Melbourne case that's now used as precedence. So in essence, it's illegal to have rebates, but lawyers and dodgy real estate agencies and marketing companies will find ways around it. The only way around it is, Martin, and this is the reason why this whole thing is concentrated on with ethnic groups, is because you get the same ethnicity marketing agent to selling agent to lawyers they use. So they all have to collude in order to have this inflated contract price, where at the end on settlement, the purchaser gets a rebate. So rather than showing that the property has had a 10% drop or a 15% drop or a 20% drop in price because it affects the value of the rest of the development, they do this in order to have the illusion that that the development's holding its value and happy-go-lucky, everything's okay. Nothing to see here, folks. But these rebates are contracts that the banks that are funding the purchase don't see, and the valuers don't see. And as I said, it takes more than one party to be involved. So in essence, the marketing agent, the selling agent, the lawyers on both sides of the coin, the vendor and the seller are colluding to falsify documents and loans.
Yeah, and of course it's pretty untransparent, isn't it? So if you're looking in from the outside, you don't see all of those cross leverage points and all the money flowing between one party and the next party and the next party. So you've got to be careful, because you can't necessarily take at face value what people tell you, right, when it comes to the way it actually works.
So then the interesting thing that to add is a lot of people have raised on the post, they raised the question of, how do the valuers then, how does the value sustain the value, because they're independent, right? Look, in some cases, historically, I'm not saying in this case, but historically, there have been valuers that have been involved and they got crucified in 2007, 2008, 2009. They lost the licenses, they lost everything. But if they don't know what they do, valuers go off obviously the most recent sales within a certain period. In this case, they would be looking at recent sales within 3 months. How the market's moving downward or trending downward very rapidly, particularly around apartments, right? Mm. So what do the developers do, or the owners of the project, the syndicate, what they do is they have what we call friendly sales within their group. So they will have somebody that obviously has a somewhat distant relative that it's very difficult to tie them up as a close party. You know, they try to get as arm's length as possible from what you're saying, as you do a historical search as who's bought, you know. So it's very difficult to tie up who's who. But look, we know what goes on. I've been in the game long enough to understand and know what goes on and all the shenanigans that are played. So developers will actually do friendly sales within their organization, in their extended networks, in order to have the recent sales within that price point of the current prices that are being advertised. Hence the reason why the rebates obviously work, and hence the reason why these high commissions can also be paid out. So yeah, so it's a big scam. There are two projects. One of them, I won't say in detail which ones they are, but I can say, just for warning our viewers, one of them is in Castle Hill and the other one is in Waterloo.
Yeah, so, be a little cautious, a little careful, and, ask those extra questions, I think, is probably the... Or get somebody like Edwin to to take the lid off it and have a look, right? Because there's a lot more going on below the waterline than many people would suspect. And I guess, Edwin, it all comes back actually to agent desperation at the end of the day, doesn't it?
Look, it does. It does matter. It does, and you see the desperate the shenanigans that agents get, because although we're seeing high clearance numbers, percentage, because it's all about percentages. The funny thing is percentages hides the reality, which is not as many transactions. So if there were four properties or four. You can break it down. Once you break things down to percentages, it hides everything else around it. In this case, the percentages that are often talked about hide the true nature of what's happening out there in the landscape, which is not a lot of transactions. And the lower the prices get, the more properties linger on market, the less transactions, the more desperate agents will become. And we're going to see a lot more of this in 2023, particularly if vendors are going to be hold their position very tight and they won't be persuaded by the selling agents to sell at the price on the day of the auction day, the price that's been dictated by the people attending the open homes. So you're going to see a lot of these shenanigans all over the place, and you're also going to see agents. If you're selling your property, you're going to see agents that are going to come to you, do a market appraisal, and tell you that they're going to achieve, this much, knowing well in advance, and they'll tell you they'll move mountains and they'll re-divert rivers in order to get the sale. They'll do everything. They'll even jump out of the deathbed in order to, crong or no crong or otherwise, in order to achieve the sale. They'll sell the vendors on the idea that they're going to get this much, but then reality comes in a period of time that they've got carriage of the sale. They will do what we call in the industry, crunch the vendor or condition the vendor to accept this much. But in reality, the property was always only worth this much. So this is yet to play out. So this is going to be more evident to see what how people are going to be. How many more listings are going to come on in the second part of January, how quickly they're going to come on based on the financial pressures. And this is what I was saying in a previous podcast, Martin, is this is, to me, the next incentive or the next mattress to cushion the blow that, with the property price blow that the government's going to throw in. I believe it's going to come in as early as the first quarter of next year, particularly when potentially we're going to see a hell of a lot of new listings coming on market, but yet there won't be a lot of transactions.
Mm. Absolutely. And I just make one other point, Edwin. One of the things to look at is the so-called comparables. So if you're going to work with an agent and they are talking about a particular property and you're perhaps giving advice on what the value should be, it's really interesting to get them to go through the comparables, right? Quite often people don't do it, but they should, because it really gives you quite a lot of insight as to what's gone on and what's going on. But they're often quite cherry picked, aren't they?
Look, they are, and at the end of the day, no vendor wants to believe that their property is worth 10, 15, 20% less anyway than what it was, than what the NAV sold 6 months ago as well. So you've got that hurdle, and hence the reason why agents will do what we call buy the listing, and that's basically, you know, tell all the nice pretty, give the vendors nice pretty numbers and high numbers in order to buy the listing. They're buying the listing because at the end of the day, look, 90% of real estate selling agents out there, a lot of people say, yeah, but if they don't sell the property, they don't get the commission. Yeah, dipstick, but they've also overcharged you on the marketing fee anyway.
Yeah, right.
So that's how they cash flow the business. Yep. Yeah, and it's not only you that is selling. They're probably told the same shit and the same BS to five other listings that they have in the area, and that's how they keep the cash flow. Otherwise, they'll be in a world of poo.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely, and quite often, of course, the trouble is again, it's a bit of theatre again, isn't it? Because you know they use these various techniques and ideas to try and actually get you to go with them. But you know, I want to just end with a story. So when I bought a property in the UK years ago when I was living in the UK, and I paid £127,000 for it. So you can tell it's a long time ago, right? But then the market adjusted, and 5 years later, because I was coming out to Australia, I decided to sell. I actually sold at 95. So I actually lost quite a chunk of capital, right? Because the markets had moved and all of those things. I just want to remind everybody, it's worth just reflecting on this. Sometimes you will have to transact and take a loss. If you want to transact, you'll have to take a loss. That's not something that many agents want to admit at the moment, I think.
No, and if they're not admitting it, the vendors are certainly still not there, because the conversation has to flow from the news media to the mainstream, to the real estate agents, then to the vendor, and hence the reason why we're still seeing a lot of properties out on market, and they linger on and they go from one agent to the next agent. Eventually, sooner than later, they're going to be conditioned to accept, especially if they, as you and I have said before, if they have to sell, they need to sell, and if they must sell.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you can say, well, why are the must sells? Well, some people have to relocate. That's what I had to do. So, you know, I had no choice. Others will do it because they're being forced into it because of the financial pressures or other circumstances. So, again, it's quite important if you're in the circle of a buying and selling event to try and understand what the vendor's motivations are and all of those things, because there's a whole set of issues above economics which is driving what people are doing.
So this is what you and I have shared with our viewers and our followers. You need to get informed.
Yep.
You need to get informed. Yes, and you need to equip yourself. You're going to jump in that ring. You got two choices. You either train yourself up, or you put somebody else in there to have the fight with the other side. But they're more equipped than what you are, and simple as that. It's a battle, and if you don't have the right arsenal in the zone, you get smashed.
Absolutely. Very important messages again, Edwin. Thank you once again for the conversation. And you know, anybody who follows these shows, there's huge amounts of insight that you share. So thank you once again. And I guess we'll guess what? Do it all again next week.
We will, and I might do the podcast there. I do have a container on the property. I might do it from there, Martin.
I shall look forward to it, Edwin. Have a good week. See you later.
All the best.
Bye.